His Eminence, our Imperious Leader.
And welcome back to Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want, just don't call me late for dinner. And it's Tuesday night in Las Vegas, 7 o'clock Pacific time, which means it's 8 o'clock if you're in the Mountain Time Zone in Denver, 9 o'clock if you're in the Central Time Zone with the Bears, who blew it and choked. Oh, well, now let the White Sox have the spotlight for a few months, please. And then 9 o'clock if you're on the East Coast in New York City. And the program is podcasted off LVRocks.com. And also it's archived over on SpankWagon.net. And tonight, after the news to me and the news to you, we'll bring back Justin from the Dunkelfin blog. He'll be back on. And then in the first, in the second hour, we'll have the pop culture discussion about the Golden Globes and everything else with Eric Berlin. And then we'll finish off with Maureen Ryan from the Chicago Tribune, who's a writer, and she's written very well about Battlestar Galactica throughout the year, the last couple of years since it started, so we'll have her on. And actually, before we get started, I did get an email from Katie Sackhoff explaining herself to me. And she said, I didn't get permission to quote the whole email, but she said, she goes, oh, I'm a frack head. She just, I guess, spaced, the interview. So, we'll bring her back next week because, she is starting shooting that movie now, The Last Sentinel, that she mentioned, when she was on 2 weeks ago. So she does apologize to me and all the listeners for missing the program, last week. And, we'll bring her back next week on the program because right now the program pretty well set. You know, I mean, it's not fair to Maureen to bump her off. You know, for Katie Sackhoff. So, I mean, you know, she understands and, you know, Katie knows. I mean, it's not professional. You know, when you have a guest to bump everyone off, you know, for somebody else, you know, unless it's, President Bush or something like that. But, anyway, you know, I just think it's not professional to do that. So we'll have Maureen on this week. And then next week, providing Katie Sackhoff's available because she said she'd have to call in from the set of the movie, The Last Sentinel. So we'll bring her on, powers that be or whatever, allows. And what else? I think I did all that. Yada yada. What?
Your intro.
My intro music. Oh, I got a nasty email. Somebody turned me in. I had to fall back to the original. No, not crackhead. Jesus, the chat. No, frackhead. Frack, as in frack. Frack me. Where's the frack at? We have a frack sound in the back. No, frack. F-R. How do you spell that show? F-R-A-K. Frack, I guess. There we go. Here comes.
You know what? I don't give a frack.
There you go. That's what she said. So anyway, yeah, so I had
to... You know what?
Oh.
I don't give a frack.
There she is. Yeah, special guest appearance. Thank you very much, my Grace Bark.
You know what? I don't give a frack.
Wow. Wow. So I had to go back to the original theme music, which Khan slapped together himself. A year and... How many months ago now? A year and 6 months? And it's still damn good, right? Nothing like the original. So, anyway, I want to go to the rest. I got nailed on the other stuff. It's the only one left I can use. So the last two, I got turned into this Paramount for the Star Trek music. Then I got turned into ABC for the other music. So I'm stuck with the original one. Nothing wrong with it, but we'll just mosey on along. So now I'll go into the news to, website is subjecttodiscussion.com and then email subject number two discussion at lvrocks.com. So. And I'll go into news to me. Of course, today, speaking of frackhead, Mayor Nagin of New Orleans is retracting his comments about saying that New Orleans will be chocolate at the end of the day, and it's God's will and everything. I mean, this guy, he's like the black Pat Robertson there. Almost time to throw a net over him, I think. And then on Monday, we had Al Gore. Where's he been? I mean, he should have ran last time around. I think he would have won. Al Gore speaking at the American Constitution Society and said that this president with unchecked power has set precedents for future presidents to also act with unchecked power. I think Al Gore was listening to my program from last week because I said those almost exact same words. So, and he said that Bush did not want a check on his power, but a FISA court, and went around the FISA court with the NSA wiretapping case. And also, the Senate acts today subservient to the executive branch and not a check and balance like it's supposed to be. And he quoted Bob Barr, who was also there, and how Bush is daring the American people to do something to defend the Constitution. And Gore wants whistleblower protection for those in the executive branch who want to come forward. I say, oh, go for it. What the hell? Get these people out. Get this stuff in the open. You know, I mean, we got basically an administration that wipes its ass with the Constitution. You know, we got to do something about this. And then Sunday, we had remarks in regards to the Alito hearings. Somebody said on CNN or MSNBC, one of them, said the most dangerous place in D.C. is between a U.S. senator and a TV camera. So I guess that's true. Think about it. Watching those hearings with Alito, how much did that guy get to talk? I think they did a tally on one of the show, one of the news channels. I think he spoke for like 10 hours, and whereas the senator spoke for like 36 hours or something like that. So, I mean, unbelievable. And then the Iran said on Sunday will host a conference on the Holocaust. So I don't know how that's going to go since they said it didn't happen and they want Israel banished to Alaska. So who knows? And on Saturday, of course, we had Shelley Winters died at 85 years old, most notably recently from Roseanne. And she was also on the Poseidon Adventure, which she won an Academy Award for that. And somebody says she was in the original Batman series. I don't recall seeing her in Batman, but maybe I was wrong. But I don't remember seeing her in Batman. And also on Saturday, we had on Hardball, retired from Friday night. Actually, I saw Saturday on the repeat. Retired General Wayne Downing says was talking about Iran and its nukes. And he said Israel said it would respond 10-1 in a response to any attack. He said he thought Israel would preempt attack Iran. So, yeah, that's a potato thing of perspective there. For one missile that Iran would lob into Israel, Israel would respond with 10. So, and Mark Shields, formerly of the Capital Gang and CNN, wrote Saturday on CNN Saturday that a very factual account of where we stand as a country 5 years after George Bush's presidency. He says a case can be made 4.5 years after the terrorist assault on New York and Washington that the criminals who organized and executed that attack have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. First, the United States is less favorably regarded and much more isolated in the world than it was before 9/11. According to the Pew Global Attitudes Project, anti-Americanism surged as a result of the U.S. war in Iraq. In 2000, 3 out of 4 citizens of Canada, Britain, France, and Germany held a favorable opinion of the United States. By 2005, less than a minority of people in those same countries felt favorably. The number and percentage of this country's citizens in poverty has gone up each and every year of this decade. Today, there are 5.4 million more Americans living in poverty, most of them children, than there were when George W. Bush was elected president. The number without health insurance grew by more than 6 million from 2000 to 2004 to more than 45 million Americans without health insurance. During the same period, employer-sponsored health insurance dropped by 5 full percentage points, covering 66% of the non-elderly to just 61%. So it's only 61% of the people in this country have health insurance. Amazing. And Friday, we had also CNN talked about the story that the cell phone call lists are being sold. One guy bought a Wesley Clark's cell phone number, and he found a number for Rita Cosby in there now. Also on the Situation Room, Zane Vergy, she had an interview with First Lady Laura Bush, and she was in the Liberia for the inauguration of the first woman president of that country. And she said sooner or later there will be a woman president here in the United States. And so, and another thing I'm wondering, why come on all these cable news channels and have these interviews with these people? They stay exclusive, then they show up the next day on Today's Show. Does that make they're exclusive? I mean, what makes them exclusive? I see exclusive, they don't talk to anybody else, for a while. But I mean, I think it's just crazy. Where else? President Bush, in a speech from New Orleans, kept referring to New Orleans as this part of the world when he was talking of this part of the world. I thought that was a little ridiculous. I mean, New Orleans is part of this part of the world, which is a part of the United States, of which Bush is the president of. So why is he keep referring to this part of the world? I mean, I thought he was referring to the tsunami or, some third world country. I don't know. And then Wednesday, Dan Quayle was on Greta Van Susteren's program on Fox talking about the Alito hearings and gave his prediction of who will be the next the Democratic Party nominee for 2008. He predicts that Hillary Clinton would be the Democratic Party nominee in 2008. And from right now, it looks like Senator McCain would be the GOP candidate in 2005. And also, bankruptcy filings from 2005 are up 31.6%. 2 million people, 1 in 53 households file for bankruptcy in an increase across the board across the country. So that was amazing. And I will move on to the news to you. And I thought that was very interesting news bits for Shelley Winters on Batman. Was she in Batman? Maybe she was on Batman. Oh, I could have swore I saw her in Batman. Local student says his science teacher bit his back. Instructor under investigation. This is from today. Louisville, Kentucky. A Jefferson County public school teacher is under investigation. Garrick Hudson, 14 years old, accused his science teacher of attacking him at the Stewart Middle School. Hudson said the teacher grabbed him by the neck and dug her teeth into his back. She bit me real hard and where it took my skin off and started bleeding, Hudson said. The boy said he got into trouble for eating candy in class. School official says they're investigating the allegation. Well, how the hell else did he get the damn bite mark on the back of his back there? You know, wasn't the teacher. Who the hell would bite him? You know? This next one is from Oak Park Heights, Minnesota. Sex offender poses as royalty and tours a school. He posed as a prospective student and tried to pass himself off as a member of a royal family from Europe until some student journalist uncovered his past. Police say Caspian visited Stillwater Area High School in Minnesota three times. He told students he was 17 and he was Caspian James Christian Stuart IV, the fifth Duke of Cleveland. I'm the sixth Duke of Chicago. How about that? At the school newspaper, a student journalist thought that if Caspian's story were true, it would make an interesting feature. They eventually found his picture on a website for Florida's Registry of Sex Offenders. KARE-TV reported the turnout. He was 22 years old. Joshua Adam Gardner, who was convicted of a fourth degree criminal sexual conduct in Winona County.
You son of a bitch! You just bit your twisted bastard ragged hell I died! You son of a bitch!
Wow. He's the fifth Duke of Cleveland, and I'm the sixth Duke of Chicago. So there you go. Con, here's the third
bitch.
Duke of Turkey. How about that? And a child dies when his head
gets... You can just suck my balls.
There you go. A child dies when his head gets stuck in a car's window. Father was asleep in the front seat, police say. Hollywood, Florida. Hollywood... There you go. Wow, is that the kid? Is that the car? Hollywood police say a toddler was accidentally choked to death by a power window Thursday. Police said that Thomas Waite was parked in a Hollywood Pediatrics Associates with his 23-month-old son in the back seat. The car was not running, but the engine was on, or the ignition was on, allowing the radio and the power windows to be operational, police said. Police said that Waite dozed off in the car while he waited for his wife and other child to come out. A woman walked out of the doctor's office and said she first thought it was a baby doll hanging out of the rear passenger window. When she realized it was a child, the woman said she screamed and pounded the door, and the kid, was removed from the car and rushed to a doctor's office. There you go. So the kid died from that. That's horrible. I mean, a freak accident that was. A kid kills himself in the power windows. Horrible. And this next... There you go. This next one is from Mount Vernon, Illinois. Officer who allegedly, of course, killed girlfriend's dog resigns Monday. Another one of these dog stories. Darth Cheney is Duke of Cleveland number one. There you go. And police in Mount Vernon investigating some recent vandalism that left more than 20... Wait a minute. Did I skip a whole thing? Wait, right? I think I did. No. Oh, there we go. No. I lost my spot. Police in Mount Vernon investigating some recent vandalism that left more than 20 tombstone damaged and some irreparably in one of the city's oldest cemeteries. Police say the damage was discovered early Monday morning in the West Salem Cemetery. Police discovered the headstones pushed over and knocked off their bases. At least five gravestones were damaged beyond repair. Police said an early 1800s gravestone was among those vandalized. What the hell? They got nothing else better to do than go into the cemetery and knock over tombstones? I mean, it's like that story a few weeks ago. We had some trailer park or something was using grave markers for a path in their trailer park. I mean, what is going on here? This next one is from San Francisco. Porn actress accused of rape out on bail. A 20-year-old porn actress is facing charges in California. I don't know about this part. Of drugging and raping a 15-year-old boy. Genevieve Elise Silva has been released from a California jail on $10,000 bail. She was booked on Friday after being extradited from Oklahoma, where she fled with the boy. She faces charges of unlawful sexual intercourse, rape of a drugged victim, child stealing by a non-custodial parent, and transport with intent to engage in criminal sexual activity. Wow. So, Yeah, hell, she drugged him and raped him. This next one is, this is a kind of funny one here. This is from, where are we here? From New Bedford, Massachusetts. Toddler called for jury duty. Girl 2 years old received summons. You know, it's gotten that bad. They can't trust the adults. They have to go down to the newborn children to sit on these juries now. Kaylee Reynolds had a problem when she recently received a summons to serve on a Taunton District Court jury. She wasn't old enough to read it. The 2-year-old has quite a few years to go before she reaches a minimum age of 18 to serve in a state jury. Lucky for Kaylee, Massachusetts Jury Commissioner Patricia Wood seemed willing to let it slide for a while. She said, we'll give her a 16-year grace period, jury commissioner said. Wood guessed the mix-up could be traced to a local census form. She said that the form has a blank or mistaken birth date. July 4th, 1776 is filled in. So what the hell? She'd be 39 years old. Is that right? 29 years old. And with that date, we'll know it's wrong. Oh, of course. Besides her questionable understanding of the concepts of guilt or innocence, there are other things why it's best for Kaylee to wait to serve. Her mother says Kaylee gets real cranky if she doesn't get her new nap. So, yeah, a new nap's going to keep her from serving on the jury there in Massachusetts. This next one's from WABC in New York. It wants to be these animal stories. Man accused of beheading cat. His cat. A Hudson Valley man is accused of shooting his cat, chopping its... There you go. There's a cat? It's a bird. Is that a cat? It's a cat. That's a cat. Okay. A Hudson Valley man is accused of shooting his cat and chopping its head off with an axe after the feline urinated on his carpet. Authorities say 30-year-old Robert C. killed the cat because he wanted to add its head to his animal skull collection. A law enforcement officer with the Dutchess County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals says one of C's neighbors found the cat's head in a bag hanging from a tree near C's home in the town of Milan, about 50 miles south of Albany. C has admitted to killing the cat because he was angry he had urinated on a carpet in his home. What the hell is an animal? C says he's been charged with animal cruelty and discharging a firearm within 500 feet of a dwelling. Weirdo, wacko. Yeah? At least, somebody else said, at least it's a cat, he's not going berserk. And what if his child would have accidentally pissed on the floor? Would he cut his child's head off for doing that? You know? This next one's from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Beautiful city. I used to go up there every year to see the White Sox play the Brewers when I was younger. Casino keeps $700 that a man found. Charles Myers said he only had a brief moment of hesitation before he turned over the $700 he found on the floor of Milwaukee's Pottawatomie Bingo Casino. In hindsight, he says he might have acted differently had he known the casino would keep the money he found last April after no one stepped up to claim it. What's this story coming out now for? This is last April. Who cares? His reward was for turning over the cash was a $25 casino slot play voucher he already used. The situation prompted him to file a complaint with the State Division of Gaming, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the hell, he turned into casino. It's up to them if they want to give a reward. What's the stake? Hello, we're the Gaming Commission. We want you to give the guy $300. Yeah, crazy. Let's see. Casino spokesman Diane Marcutt says it's a standard practice for the casino to keep any found money if no one can legitimately claim ownership. Well, I mean, what the hell? You got something for it. I mean, I don't know. You want all the money? You want half the money? Who knows? War going on in Nigeria oil field. This is from Sunday from Lagos, Nigeria. Nigerian troops battled militia fighters in swamps around a Royal Dutch Shell oil platform that militants attacked at dawn Sunday. The third assault on Shell oil facilities in less than a week. I think our gas is going up for this reason. I don't know. Third assault on Shell oil facilities in less than a week in the troubled region. Shell Oil confirmed the attack on the oil platform from the southern oil-rich Niger Delta, and said some of its staff had been injured and taken to the hospital. In a statement, Shell said heavily armed persons in speedboats attacked the platform early Sunday. They burned down staff, blah, 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 blah. So it's a war going on. No kidding. So, it's an oil-rich country, though, so they'll worry about that. They want that oil, they'll calm things down over real fast. They want that money, the country will cooperate, and Shell will take care of that mess. There we go. This is from Sunday from WLS in Chicago, world's largest store. Mother of disabled rape victim faces charges. Suspect pleads not guilty. A Wilmington, Illinois mother has been charged with accepting $10,000 from a man after he allegedly assaulted her daughter. Police say Kimberly Reardon agreed to keep quiet in return for the money. Kimberly Reardon, the mother of the disabled teen girl, surrendered to Will County authorities Thursday night. The state's attorney said Kimberly Reardon accepted $10,000 from her daughter's attacker. She stated that she had no knowledge that her daughter had been sexually assaulted after she accepted $10,000 from Lawrence Lee Southwood to not report the. So this guy, he went to the mother to give them the money, and she didn't know that her daughter was assaulted. So, and this guy's 68 years old. 68-year-old convicted sex offender was arrested Christmas Day after a state's attorney office received a tip that led them to him. So, pig, huh? Pig. That'd be gets thrown in jail and the prisoners have at him. You know what I mean? It's like we got to take these hardened criminals, the murderers, the child molesters, and build these like gulags up in Alaska and ship them all up there where they're banished from society. You got to ban these people out. You know? It's horrible. You know, what was Goof saying? You should talk about what Hillary said about Bush and Republicans in the way. I don't agree with what Hillary said about what she say about the plantation, and that was off the mark there. That was way out of line what she said about the House Republicans are treating the Democrats like the House plant. It's like a plantation. That was off the out of line too. I mean, as much as I like Hillary, that was a little really off line there. So and Gore, everybody talk about Gore. So anyway. Pakistan protests airstrike, 18 killed, but Al-Qaeda's number two man, apparently not among them. Pakistan has protested to the United States over an airstrike. This is from the news, because they didn't kill the bin Laden's number two man, Al-Zawahiri, and they all are up in arms. You know, there's a CIA plane that went into Pakistan and blew up this village because they're trying to get him. I mean, what are we doing? You know, that's the CIA going in there. We didn't even get the country's permission to fly over. Now, what if it was reversed? Say, the country of Panama decide to bomb Miami to get Noriega out of the jail in Miami. What would happen there? We'd be firing nukes at the Panama if we did that. You know, why? How come it's okay for us to violate another country's airspace without even their knowledge or permission to go in there and blow up a village, and turn out that the guy's not even in the damn thing, and he killed all these innocent people? You know, I think it's out of line. But that, you know, it's just me. I just think if it's reversed, we'd be screaming holy hell about it. Trump. There you go. Trauma pill could make memories less painful. This is from AOL News on Sunday. This is another thing they want to take a pill. There's a pill they're going to come out with that could erase bad memories, such as I suppose in a recent movie, your brain could be wiped clean of sad and traumatic events. So they're coming up with this pill that supposedly could be having you experience a real horrible traumatic experience. So I could see that. But I mean, how do they know which memories are going to get erased when you take this pill? You know, I mean, you wake up, you don't know in the last 15 years. I don't know. I mean, how they pick, you know, I want that memory in. I thought your memories is what makes you who you are, quoting James T. Kirk from, which movie was that? The Final Frontier, when he went to the Cyborg. You know, true, we got to have our memories. You know, memories makes you evolve as a human being, as a person, for crying out loud. You know, so I don't know. But, you know, in the air side, on the flip side, I could see if he had some horrible traumatic experience, you know, like the, you know, 9/11 building or whatever, and you can take the pill. But how do you know what memory is going to get knocked out? I don't know. So, I don't see what happens with that one. Postal worker indicted over Netflix blockbuster movie thefts. This is from Loveland, Denver. Loveland movie accused of stealing. A federal grand jury in Denver has returned an indictment against Karen Durante, 24, of Loveland, Colorado, in connection with the thefts of DVD movies from the U.S. Mail. Durante was working as a contract mail carrier at the time of the thefts, according to the indictment. She is charged with 4 counts of mail theft and a 5th count charged with possession of 1,256 movies that have been stolen from the mail. So,
brilliant!
Yeah. Anyway, it's really similar to this in Chicago. We had a few years ago, there were stories of mail workers not delivering the mail to homes, and then they go underneath what's that street in Chicago? I can't remember now. It's a double-decker street. Anyway, they go underneath it, and then they see buckets, these canisters of mail burning with the homeless are burning this mail to keep their hands warm. It's mail that's burning in there. So they have mail carriers driving by, tossing the mail out in the bag, and the homeless people are throwing it in the trash and burning it to keep themselves warm. So, man. And what else? Next one, pool area, not for breastfeeding. Ann Arbor woman told YMCA rule concerns food, drink by pool. That she could not breastfeed by the pool. Her breastfeeding is a distraction to the lifeguards. An Ann Arbor woman says she was asked to stop breastfeeding her baby. There you go. In public, in an area YMCA.
Oh, mama.
There you go. Now she hopes by speaking out, the gray line about breastfeeding in public is limited. What the hell is this? Don't they have, every place I know now has got these things in the restrooms. You go in and nurse your baby for crying out. What's the problem with going to the bathroom or going out to your car and doing it? I mean, why you had to sit there and do it in public? You know, we had a problem this week at the hotel. You know, I'm sitting there over at the desk. I look over. This woman walks by with her baby in the stroller, and she goes over to the post. I'm like, what's going on here? You know, she takes the baby out and a little towel. I'm like, oh, she's not. And she sits down on the floor by the post where people are walking by the desk, and she starts breastfeeding her child in the front of the damn desk there where everybody's walking by. Thousands of people are walking by while this woman's breastfeeding her child. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know? I'm all for, you know, taking your child, but doing a little accordion, whatever the hell that word is, decorum is required. I mean, what if I decide to take a whiz in the fountain there in front of the desk? Oh, I'll just pull down and take a whiz into the fountain? No! I mean, you go into the bathroom. You're saying the breastfeeding, you know? I just think it's out of line. That's just me, though. School hit by illness, up to 245 stay home. This is from Hamilton Southeastern Junior High. A viral outbreak is suspected. This is from Indianapolis, Indiana. As many as 230 Hamilton Southeastern Junior High students stayed home Friday after a suspected outbreak of a fast-spreading norovirus that causes stomach flu-like symptoms swept through the campus. District officials called the county health department and sent a message home to parents after about 23% of the student population failed to turn up in the classroom. The illness struck the staff to about a fifth of the teachers. 15 teachers were out sick on Friday. That's horrible. We had a similar situation like that here in Vegas. A couple of hotels have had problems with the norovirus. One downtown, I think one or two on the Strip have had a problem with that too. So, man. And what else we have here? This is a story I've been following. The Chinese, apparently, are the first to discover America. This is from the Scotsman, the Scotland's national newspaper, on Thursday. An ancient map said to be... There you go. Actually, I saw it on Yahoo. They unveiled the map, and it looks like North America's there. A map set to be unveiled this week may prove that it was a Chinese eunuch who discovered America and not Christopher Columbus. Columbus found the New World in 1492, but a copy of a map dated 1418... to made public in Beijing and London could show it was in fact Admiral Zheng He who got there first more than 70 years earlier. If it proves to be genuine, there you go. The clear depiction of the Americas, Africa, and Europe will bolster his case significantly, according to The Economist. I saw that. I'm like, wow, this would be amazing. This blows Christopher Columbus out of the water. Boy, is he going to be mad, huh? Well, I wonder if he'll sue, huh? Yeah, let me be the Chinese. You know, the maps say Chinese on it, but made in China. Probably did. So, I don't know. I think our guest is on the line. Justin there? Well, give him a proper welcome, because he's been gone for a couple weeks. I had a Chip from the Political Sports Report on, and politicalsports.com, and we're going to do a little alternating now with Justin, and next week we'll have Chip on from the Political Sports. We'll switch it back and forth. And waiting for our accompaniment. There you go. One more? No? And I think we're... there we go. There we go. Now I think we're joined by Justin from the Dunk Event blog. Justin, are you there, sir?
Yeah, hey, good.
Hi. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back. There you go. You missed... you missed that, didn't you?
Oh, geez. You don't know how much, Sean.
Oh, well, it makes your day.
I was pining for it, yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Now, you can also hear it on the podcast. You go back and click it a few times on the podcast, listen to it if you wish. You know?
Oh, yeah, of course. It goes without saying, Sean.
Absolutely. So we're welcoming you back to the program. You're gone for a couple weeks.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. And now, first of all, you want to talk about you said, hello, Justice Alito. Yeah, he's going to
say. Yeah, he's so in. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Alito. Thing that I kind of wanted to focus on just a little bit was the whole thing around Martha Alito crying. They made a big deal out of it. The AP picked it up. I think Reuters picked it up. It was this whole thing about the Democrats bullying Samuel Alito. And I have to ask, what exactly is the opposition party supposed to do? Are they supposed to, like, not ask tough questions about, you know, organizations that Alito was part of, you know, back when he was, you know, of a decent age to make, you know, reasonable decisions, that who were, you know, sexist and, you know, racist and homophobic. I mean, you know, or at least had some members who openly shared these views in their writings.
Well, I think, well, the hearings turned into a big sham because, I mean, like I said, some channel, I don't know who it was, they ran, you know, the amount of time that the senator spoke and the time that Alito spoke for like 10 hours and the senator spoke for like 36 hours. I was like, wait a minute now, you know, and especially, what's his name, gave a, you know, 12-minute question, Biden, you know?
I didn't see Biden's 12-minute question.
Yeah, he asked a 12-minute question. It's like, what is this? You know, and they gave him 30 minutes, and they showed, like, the senator spoke for, like, 20 of the minutes, and then Alito only spoke for 10 minutes of the back-and-forth questioning, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing. It's like, and you know, if that is, if they want to, I mean, aren't you just going to question, you know, the person however you want to question them? I mean, to me, it seems like if they're not, if they aren't necessarily just like, you know, just hammering him, right?
Yeah.
Which it didn't really seem like they were hammering him.
No, I think
they were asking him pretty, you know, pretty fair questions.
Yeah.
And I had a really hard time with the whole demonization of this idea of, well, you can't ask these types of questions.
Mm.
You can't ask the hard questions. You can't question the veracity of somebody's, you know, somebody's statements. You can't question if they actually are telling the truth or not.
Oh, no.
And I think that's really weird. I mean, we're talking about a lifetime appointment here.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing would happen if there was a Democratic appointee,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, you had conservatives. Questioning the candidate, you know, that's just how it goes.
Yeah, well, I think, well, see, a lot of the Republicans harken back to when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was on. Oh, that they didn't really. She won in 98-2. Well, that's a different time now. You know, they see the agenda that the conservatives have to overturn Roe versus Wade, and you know, this empowering the executive branch and all this stuff. So now you're going to see more of that. I think no matter who's the president, you're going to see more of this. You know, deeply question these nominees, huh?
Well, I think because there is such a divide right now too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's the Ruth Bader Ginsburg thing is pretty interesting. You know, I mean, like you had essentially, you know, had a justice, you know, who seemed to have a, you know, pretty much overwhelming support. But then you have polls, you know, for as far as the Alito stuff, you have polls coming out from Harris that says if Alito is going to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
70% of Americans polled said they would not want him as a justice.
Really?
And I think that's pretty important, you know. I think that's a pretty important thing to consider. But you know, in any event, welcome to the court, Justice Alito.
Yeah,
that's all I want to say. It's a done deal.
Well, Darth Alito in the chat room saying that Ginsburg didn't answer the hard questions, does that make her unqualified? And it says, like, the Democrats don't have an agenda. Well, they both sides have the agenda, you know, right?
Sure. I mean, it's a lifetime appointment, you know. Roberts didn't answer the hard questions,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, it just goes down the line. This is a, you know, I mean, Biden actually kind of had a had an interesting thought. It's like these unless you catch somebody in a lie, like
mm-hmm.
Bork.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, they're just going to sail through. And I don't know if that's what we meant when we were talking about putting, you know, justices on the Supreme Court. At least, you know, I mean, was that what the Founding Fathers meant? You know, is that what they intended?
Hmm.
Just to have people sail through, and not really answer the questions and not really talk about how they may or may not, you know, rule? I don't know.
No.
It doesn't seem like it would be that way. That's why they have a lifetime appointment. You know, you would want to know what's going to go on.
Yeah, you would think. Yeah.
But, you know, and that's just not how it is. And Biden, I think, brought up a good point. It's like, why even do these hearings anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's going into regardless because, you know, first of all, the GOP holds a majority in the Senate, so obviously he's going to go back.
Yeah, I mean, unless they try to filibuster, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah, Feinstein said it, she doesn't see a filibuster, and now what about his wife breaking down? Now wasn't the Democrats who made her break down. It was Lindsey Graham that caused her to break down, and run from the room, right?
Lindsey basically apologized to Alito for how poorly he was treated, mm-hmm. and again, it's one of those things. I think it just depends on what side of the fence you're on.
Mm-hmm.
To me, they asked some tough questions.
Yeah,
but again, it's a lifetime appointment.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to ask the tough questions, then you're never going to ask them. And we need to make sure that this person is qualified. We need to make sure that this person, he had the whole concerned alumni of Princeton stuff is a little weird. It is.
Well,
when I first saw it, I wrote about it. I didn't think that he should be taking responsibility for this, but gaining subsequent knowledge about it, about how Bill Bradley had quit the organization like 15 years before Alito put it on his 1983 resume,
mm-hmm.
For the position that he was applying for in the Reagan administration,
mm-hmm.
And Bradley was had basically said this is bad. Bill Frist, said he didn't like this organization.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's weird. It is weird.
Yeah.
And in 83, I think Alito was like 36.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to be honest with you, when you're 36, your world views are pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, he's not some kid, 18 years old or 20 years old. I mean, at that time, most of your beliefs are pretty well rock solid, you would think, huh?
I would imagine. Yeah. I would imagine. Yeah. So I think it's fair to question, why he put this on his resume.
Hmm.
I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
I think it's one of these things that, okay, so he's a conservative appointee,
mm-hmm.
and you think that there has to be like some sort of level of decorum. Like, of course the conservatives think like, well, why are you questioning him so hard?
Yeah.
Why are you, it's like, well, that's just how it is.
Hmm. Amazing.
So, I would expect the same type of questioning from conservatives if a Democrat Democratic appointee gets in there.
It's going to be subject to the same scrutiny. I say same thing with Bush with the would you watch Al Gore's speech yesterday?
Read the transcript.
It's a transcript. Yeah, I mean, it's a powerful speech, and he said the same thing. He goes, "What's the stop? The GOP has got to be careful with this because what they're doing now with Bush, with this war on the Constitution, he's setting the stage for whoever the Democrat president's going to be the next time around. They're going to be expecting the same privileges that Bush enjoyed while he was president, and they'll be screaming from the top of the rooftops when a Democrat gets in."
I think there's a lot of, right now, there's just a lot of party loyalty, kind of blind party loyalty. But you know what? I'm glad to see people like Bob Barr come out and say, you know what? This isn't right. I'm glad to see people like Sam Brownback come out and say, this looks like, Bush is overstepping his bounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, those are two significant Republican voices. And you can't ignore that. You can't ignore when somebody from the other side is going, this isn't right. And I think a lot of people have charged Gore with, opportunism, with Martin Luther King Day, blah, 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 blah. They basically, the White House has come out and said, they're jumping all over this. They say that, Gore and Clinton did the same thing, but it really wasn't the same thing because, when they were searching, I believe it was Aldrich Ames,
mm-hmm.
In 1993, and Jamie Gorelick, who was then Attorney General, they still required warrants for electronic surveillance,
mm-hmm.
But the FISA did not cover physical searches, which is what they did with Aldrich.
Mm.
Now, in 95, the law was changed to cover physical searches. So, you know, I just from what I'm going off of, from what I'm reading, from what I'm seeing in history, unless somebody else can give me, you know, different facts, the White House is misrepresenting, you know, what Gorin Clinton did.
Yeah, because you have here, and your says AP notes that at the time of the Ames search in 1993, when Gorelick testified a year later, the FISA Act required warrants for electronic surveillance for intelligence purposes, but did not cover physical searches. The law was changed to cover physical searches in 1995 under legislation that Clinton supported and signed. So that blows holes in what they said that Clinton and Gore were doing the same thing, huh?
Yeah, it completely blows holes in it. And what I think McClellan and the White House are banking on is that the media and the public, they're not going to be very vigilant about, you know, finding out exactly what they mean by that. They oftentimes trade on people's just acceptance of like, oh well, Gore, you know, he's just, you know, saying this stuff. He did the same thing. Yeah. Blah 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 blah.
He's bitter. He's bitter.
He's bitter. Blah blah blah. You know,
got screwed out of the White House by the Supreme Court.
What? Gore said some stuff that does seem very bitter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like in the past, it's not, you know, that the whole bitterness thing. Like, okay, well, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But is that, you know, are these the facts, or are these just, you know, you trying to obfuscate, you know, cover up, you know, the good points in his speech.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the same thing. If they can't attack the message, they attack the messenger. You know, oh, Gore, he's an old hack, he's bitter. You know, I mean, what about what he said? Gore was an idiot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Gore. Yeah, exactly. Gore's an idiot. Gore's bitter. He still thinks that he won the 2000 election. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, let's talk about the substance.
Exactly.
That's not what's happening too, and I think it's interesting, you know, that they made a point to, you know, here's the thing. I mean, if Gore's speech wasn't, you know, on point, I don't think that they would have cared. You know, they wouldn't have like attacked it so much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if you get a chance, go on cspan.org. They still have it up there, so that's where I got it from.
Yeah,
it is unbelievable. The speech spoke for an hour and 6 minutes too. A long time.
It was riveting, huh?
And he made sense, too. He didn't do all that sighing or anything. He didn't debate. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, if, you know what? At first, you know, years ago, I said, oh, thank God. I'm glad Bush was president for 9/11. Now, and I'm looking back, maybe we would have been better off with Al Gore in there. You know what I mean?
You never know. That's one of those things.
Hindsight.
That's the whole hindsight thing.
Yeah.
Listen, I voted for Gore. I wanted Gore over Bush. I think that the types of things that Bush has done post 9/11, I think a lot of people are like, yes, 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 those are good things. But you know, the torture stuff, the hidden prisons, the, you know, this NSA wiretapping stuff. I think that Democrats definitely do respect the rule of law, and I also think that a lot in the right wing, they begrudge Democrats because they say rule of law, but there's a reason for that, and it's because, you know, that is the law. When you have it, you have to obey it.
True.
Otherwise, you know, our democracy, it begins to break down. It begins to crack.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure that we, you know, respect those types of things. We respect the Constitution.
True. Not wage a war on it.
What's that?
Not wage a war on it. Like, you know, he said the war in Iraq is going down the drain, but the war he's waged on the Constitution has been, you know, right on target, you know?
Well, you know, I don't necessarily think Bush is, like, you know, purposely waging a war on the Constitution. I think here's the thing, and I think that this is kind of the most logical explanation.
Yeah, but didn't he say the Constitution is a worthless piece of crap or something?
That was a gossip site. That hasn't been substantiated.
Okay.
That was just kind of like a secondhand thing.
Oh, okay.
But here's the thing. So, you know, you're Bush, and 9/11 happens on your watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you were essentially asleep at the wheel. Condoleezza Rice completely ignored some. The memo titled Bin Laden Wants to Strike Inside the U.S., you know, I mean, just all this other stuff. So, you know, you have all these people, all these advisors around you, including Cheney, saying we need to do X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
And you're scared. You're scared that something like this is going to happen again. And you overstep. And that's what you do. I don't think it was a purpose like fuck the Constitution. I don't think that's what he was saying. I think that there are some certain things where they found legal arguments that, you know, they could justify these things. And so they did them, as opposed to just backing off and saying, oh, hold on, you know, maybe this isn't the right thing to do. Hmm. Would a Democrat have done? Well, maybe this isn't the right thing to do. Quite possibly.
Hmm.
Quite possibly. I think that a Democrat would probably respect the rule of law a little bit more and not try to find ways around it, like the whole torture thing, like the enemy combatant thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know.
No.
You don't know. So I don't think Bush is purposefully waging a war on the Constitution. I think that language is really strong. But I do think that they're definitely trying to find ways to game the system, you know?
Yeah.
So that they can say, oh, well, the Constitution does say this because of X, Y, and Z.
True.
And, you know, now, that's their prerogative, but if they get bit in the ass by it, you know,
yeah.
They get bit in the ass by it.
Yeah. Now, what about the Iran? You want to talk about Iran, about the, you said we want to take our oil and go home? Say
yeah,
that.
Iran.
Iran's situation is
a tough one. They want nuclear energy. They want mm-hmm. to build these nuclear plants. We don't want them to have these nuclear plants. We don't want them to have weapon-grade, you know, nuclear materials, which they will if they build these plants. So, you know, you have kind of a problem though,
mm-hmm.
because Iran, you know, produces a lot of oil. Now, we don't buy any of its oil directly, but the people and the countries that do buy it, if Iran, you know, turns off the spigot, then they're going to be competing for the oil that we do buy, right?
Correct.
So it's going to push the price per barrel up like crazy. So we need to find some sort of compromise. I mean, thankfully, China and Russia, who do buy oil from Iran, have come out and said, you know, they've come out against Iran's nuclear program.
Mm.
So that's a good step in the right direction. But what I think that this brings up is the fact that we need to focus some of our resources in the war on terrorism into finding alternative energy sources, and really, really pushing for that, because we can't be beholden to the president of Iran, who's talking about how the Holocaust didn't happen, how he wants to wipe Israel off the face of the earth.
Yeah, and move it to.
Can't be beholden to these guys.
Yeah, and move it to Alaska. You know, move Israel to Alaska. Well, how are you going to do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
And this is a guy. This is not a secular guy.
Yeah.
This is a guy who wants to bring back, you know, like Islamic power. I mean, mm-hmm. we're talking about a guy who would potentially use nuclear weapons in the way that we feared Saddam would,
mm.
right?
Yeah.
And they actually had the capabilities, and we know that they're like, you know, 3 to 4 months away from having those, you know, possibly having, like, weapons-grade nuclear materials, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that not only we need to focus on Iran, and we need to make sure that they don't get that nuclear, you know, their nuclear programs started up.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the last thing we need, because like I said, I read that quote earlier that Israel said that if they're ever hit with one missile or they respond with 10, they do a 10-to-1 response.
Oh yeah, know? No, Israel will do airstrikes, and they'll definitely take out their capabilities.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think that there's a possibility that we'll take out their capabilities too, or
yeah.
at least, you know, some sort of coalition force. I don't think it's going to be the same type of, like, invade the country, that type of thing, but I think that there will probably be strategic airstrikes.
Hmm.
Yeah. My problem right now is I'm, you know, there's been some people on my side, at least, and maybe I haven't seen it necessarily, you know, this type of message, but I'm sure that it will start to grow, is this whole kind of, like, blood for oil thing.
Yeah.
And how people are like, well, if it's going to truly create a situation where, you know, our oil is going to cost too much, then we need to go in there. And I think
yeah.
that's just so wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, just ridiculously
now,
wrong.
Now, what about this? Oh, Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, actually, let me just finish. But getting back to the whole thing about, you know, investing in alternative energy sources, there's this really interesting process, and it's called, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, but it's a coal-to-gas process. It's called Fischer-Tropsch. Mm-hmm. And this basically just takes coal and turns it into, I believe, the sweet crude that can be turned into gas.
Really?
And yeah, and this process has been around for decades. I mean, I think it was like since 1915 or 1920 or something like that.
Huh.
It's been around for a long time. Now, you know, we have a lot of coal in this country.
Yeah, how come we're not doing no more of this stuff, you know what I mean?
Well, we're starting to. There's I believe there's a plant being built in Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
But I've written about this a couple different times on Donclafon, and I believe that the governor of Montana, Montana sits on a lot of coal, and actually there's more coal in Montana that could be converted to gas than there is oil in Saudi Arabia.
Really? Now that's incredible. I mean, you would think they'd be all over this to dig up all this coal and turn it into gas. That way we can back off of this foreign oil.
You would think so. And hopefully, you know, and I know that the governor, and I think it's Montana. It might be Wyoming. I'm not totally sure. I have to go back and look. But the governor of Montana has just been like, listen, you know, we need billions of dollars to get this stuff started. Let's get it started. And that, you know what I say? I say take some money from the Pentagon's defense budget.
There you go.
And put it into that type of stuff, because that getting our energy sources in line is going to be the best defense that we can have.
Yeah, the oil, our oil policy is our foreign policy. Take some of the, like you said, take $100 billion out of the defense and plow it into this coal to gas business. Darth Leto is saying that coal to gas needs crude to hit $80 to $100 per barrel to be cost feasible.
I don't think that's correct at all.
Hmm.
From what I've done with my research, it produces a cleaner burning fuel, and you can make this for like $30 a barrel.
Wow.
I'll go back and do the research, but I think that that's wrong.
Huh. And then I've only got a couple minutes left. You want to talk about now what's CNN doing hiring Glenn Beck, huh?
It's the same thing like when MSNBC hired Michael Savage.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they're doing this.
Yeah,
it's
he's
like
a...
the whole Foxification of the mainstream media. And I, you know, I don't know if they're trying to shed some sort of, I don't know what the hell they're doing, honestly.
Mm.
I mean, this guy is completely incendiary,
mm-hmm.
and he belongs on the radio. He doesn't belong. CNN, the most trusted name in news, right? I mean, that's their tagline. And they're going to bring on a guy like Glenn Beck, you know. And hey, listen, O'Reilly, you know, kicks CNN's ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but you don't need to be. You know, I think that this is just it's more of a trend, that a short-term trend is instead of a long-term trend. And by the way, O'Reilly is not Glenn Beck, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And thankfully, Beck isn't Savage, you know, which I think is, you know, he's one of the worst commentators.
Mm.
But Beck said stuff like, I sent this to you, Beck said stuff like about Nick Berg's father, Nick Berg, the guy who had was killed by terrorists in Iraq. But
he was beheaded, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was beheaded.
Yeah.
It was an awful thing. And and his father came out and, you know, and blamed Bush. And here's what Glenn Beck said. The want to be a better person today than I was yesterday says he's a dad, he's grieving, but I don't buy that. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. I think he is grieving, but I think he's a scumbag as well. I don't like this guy at all.
Unbelievable. And this is the father of the guy who got his head cut off in Iraq, right?
Yeah, I mean, this guy, I mean, I think, you know, allow this guy to publicly vent a little bit, you know, especially when things like the WMDs weren't, you know, all that information, nobody was finding WMDs, you know, the war with, you know, the insurgents/terrorists were starting to get a stronger foothold. You know, the military wasn't securing the towns like they, you know, like they say that they are going to now. And Beck takes the chance to go after Berg's father.
And
that's pretty, I don't know, to me it's pretty disgusting. And if I was the guy who was in charge of programming at CNN, and I read like half the stuff that Becca said,
mm-hmm.
I'd just be like, no dice. This guy does not represent CNN's like values at all.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I understand what they're
doing. I don't know what the hell they're doing, but that's what they're doing.
Well, second of all, what time slot will his show take? I mean, mm-hmm. As I recall, the time slots on CNN are all filled up. I mean, you got the Situation Room, and you got the unless they're going to boot out Paula Zahn. Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah. I really don't. I just heard about this today, and I haven't really dug like deep into it, but I have. I'm sure we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Justin, we'll let you go. We're at the end of our segment here.
Oh, great!
Well, thank you. We'll talk to you in two weeks.
Good talking to you.
Talk to you in 2 weeks, right?
Talk to you in 2 weeks,
all right.
Man.
Thank you very much.
Get out of Katie for me.
She's not going to be on this week.
She isn't on this week?
She no-showed me last week.
She what?
She no-showed last week.
Ah, Katie.
Yeah, but she's all right. She sent me an apology email, so I'll bring her back. I already had the show booked up for this week, so I'll bring her back next week.
Dig it.
All right, man. All right, have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye. And there he goes. That was Justin from the Dunkelfin blog, and it was nice having him back. So I said next week Chip will be back from politicalsports.com. They're going to alternate those two around a little bit like they do with the blog critics at the pop culture. Usually somebody different every week. Kind of freshens it up a little bit, you know what I'm saying? And the other thing I want to talk about, this poor woman, Jill Carroll, the reporter for the Christian Science Monitor, she's held over there. She's not going to be coming out of there alive, unfortunately. I mean, we all know what's going to happen to her. It's sad, because they keep airing that video over and over again of her. I'm looking at it on CNN, on Yahoo News right here. So anyway, and when we come back in the second hour, we'll have Eric Berlin from blogcritics.org with our pop culture discussion. And then later in the second hour, it'll be Maureen Ryan from the Chicago Tribune with our Battlestar Galactica discussion report. And this is Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. We'll see you in just a couple minutes. Thank you.
guarantee that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And we are back and for the second hour of Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Max, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want. Just do not call me late for dinner. We thank Justin from the Dunkelfin for being on. And the first segment of the program, a nice review about politics and everything else. We thank him very much. And I see he's joining the action in the chat room. Don't beat him up too bad, guys. So joining us now will be Eric Berlin from blogcritics.org. Eric, are you with us, sir?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for being back on the program. This is your second visit to us.
Number two, looking forward to it.
There you go. So we thank you for being back, and we're just gonna, you know, a lot of new listeners. You know, Blog Critics has agreed to be a regular contributor to the program. In the second hour, usually they'll have a pop culture segment at the top of the second hour, and it's a rotating list of contributors. So we thank blogcritics.org greatly for the contribution to the program.
Subject to Discussion loves blogcritics.org, and the feeling is absolutely mutual.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I wish I could get some sponsors to show some love, but oh well. well. And then now, first off, you want to talk about the Golden Globes. We don't want to dwell on the movies too much because I think, you know, all these TV shows are, you know, beat up on the Golden Globes with the movies. But, you know, Best Picture, of course, was Brokeback Mountain with, you know, the gay cowboy movie, right?
The gay cowboy movie. Yeah. I think the major takeaway from the films is that, Brokeback Mountain and Walk the Line are both going to be really strong going into Oscar season because they really took the lion's share of the major category awards, you know. Best Drama, of course, went to Brokeback Mountain. Yeah. Musical or Comedy, which is kind of an oddball category anyway, but it gives, you know, an opportunity to highlight some good work going on out there. Walk the Line took that category, and of course they pulled in, you know, Best Actress and Actor in a Musical or Comedy for Walk the Line with Reese Witherspoon and Joaquin Phoenix, and Best Director, of course, went to Ang Lee. For Brokeback Mountain.
Well,
so you really have to think that they're going to, you know, be looking very, very strong going into all the major categories for the Oscars.
Well, I mean, it's amazing because, you know, Walk the Line's not a musical. I mean, anyway, they sang in it, but it wasn't like Chicago or anything like that. It was
exactly. And I think even Joaquin Phoenix noted it just happens to be a drama with music in it.
Yeah.
So it, you know, makes the category even stranger in a way.
Yeah, that's odd. But Joaquin Phoenix did a hell of a job in that movie. It's like he channeled Johnny Cash. You know, I mean, he sounded just like him. I mean, they said there was no lip syncing to the songs because Johnny Cash wanted somebody to actually can sing, you know, be able to sing the songs, not lip sync to him. You know?
Yeah. I think Joaquin Phoenix has proved over the years what a versatile actor it is. Of course, it's so tragic that his brother, you know, River, died at such a young age. Another sterling talent. You know, and I think it's really nice to see him getting the recognition he deserves. There was some chatter that, you know, because Jamie Foxx won for Ray, another biopic, of a music legend last year, that Joaquin Phoenix would kind of get cast aside. But obviously that hasn't happened so far.
Now they're saying that with Brokeback Mountain winning the Best Picture Drama, they'll propel it to the Oscars, right?
Yeah, exactly. You'd have to think that it's going to be in very strong contention along with Walk the Line. You know, you'd have to say, you know, right away those are the two front runners for all the major categories. You know, all the great performances across the board, of course. You know, and again, Ang Lee looking good for the director category.
Yeah, and then Felicity Huffman won Best Actress in a Drama for Transamerica, which is good for her. She kind of gets overshadowed in a whole, what's it called, Designing Women show?
Desperate Housewives. Yeah,
whatever, yeah. And she gets overshadowed on that show. It's good she won an award because, you know, that movie was, you know, I haven't seen it yet, but from what it looks like, she did it. She's a woman playing a man playing a woman, right?
Yeah, I think it's some sort of trans thing going on there. I actually didn't know about the movie until I saw that it won the award. So good for her, good for the film for getting some visibility there.
Yeah, and then also the Gold Globes for TV. Now, I don't see Battlestar Galactica anywhere here in the listing here, but that's all right. Sci-fi.
Yeah, there's no science fiction or musical category.
I see that. Yeah, you know, science fiction television always comes up short in all these award shows. You know, I mean, they always, Star Trek, I don't think, they won some awards for whatever, you know, nothing for the acting or anything like that, which I think is ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, science fiction gets shunned aside in television and films both. I mean, something close to my heart is the film Serenity by Joss Whedon, which is really, you know, sort of a multi-genre movie, and it got really, you know, great reviews, but ignored by audiences. So I think you know, science fiction is just one of those things that is kind of hard to break through.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the last thing. Like I know you said the best TV series went to Lost, and that show is actually picking up steam as it goes on and now into its, what is this, the third season? Second season?
No, it's in the middle of its second season now, and in many ways it's just as strong, just as interesting as its first. You know, it's kind of the mystery deepens. But, you know, that's really funny, just harkening back to what we just talked about, because there are some, you know, sort of science fiction elements to Lost, although we're not quite sure how many they are. But I'm absolutely thrilled that that show is getting the you know, it's one of those rare cases where it's a critical hit and a hit with audiences, as well it should be, because it's just a really, really great show.
What about the rumor that at the end of the series Lost, they're going to look up and there'll be a sign that'll say Jurassic Park? What do you think about that? No?
You know, that's the fun of the show, because there's so many different theories. You know, the purgatory theory is pretty strong. That, you know, they've all gone off to some kind of, you know, middle ground between life and death, and they're all dealing with their issues somehow. I find that particularly interesting to think about myself. This past week's was a particularly great show with the new character Mr. Echo kind of getting the in the spotlight, and you know, kind of facing down some of the more sinister elements on the island and going toe to toe with them was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, well, it's another theory I thought of, that, you know, all these numbers, everything they're saying, that maybe I saw it somewhere that Lost is going to be like all these people on this island are patients of Matthew Fox's character, and he's you know, he's dead or laying in a coma somewhere. And he's visiting all these patients in a different life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a new popular one, actually, which is very interesting. You know, the interesting thing is, although, you know, every single character on the show is in some fundamental way, quote unquote, lost, Jack's character seems to be the most pure in many ways. You know, although he regrets some decisions that he's made in terms of his father on the show, and the woman that he wound up leaving behind, I believe. You know, he's really kind of the quote-unquote best character in terms of his moral fiber. So it would be really interesting to see if the whole sort of fabric of the show rotates around him in some way.
Interesting. And then best actress went to Geena Davis for Commander-in-Chief. Now
she's really fantastic on that show. Yeah. And she really carries it on her shoulders. And really makes, you know, a female American president seem realistic in many ways to a lot of viewers.
Exactly.
I can't complain with that at all.
That's what I'm saying. I think she's warming us up for Hillary Clinton in 2008, I think, because, you know, this show, now Commander Chief's getting stronger as it goes, too, because they just changed the producers. It's now Stephen Bochco is the executive producer, if I'm correct, right?
Actually, I hadn't heard that, but that would be good news, obviously. Stephen Bochco is a very big name in television.
Absolutely. Well, they got rid of the creator. Was it Ron Lurie? Because I guess the show was going in overruns, and the episodes were coming into the network late, so they brought in Bochco to fine-tune the show. He's the one who brought in Mark Paul Gosselaar in as well. So he's fine-tuning the show. So.
Oh, I see. You know, I had actually started off with Commander-in-Chief and was really loving it throughout the fall and kind of lost track of it going into the winter break, and I'm just looking forward to actually catching up with it again.
Yeah, it's got the feeling of the West Wing when it sounds like it's, first and second season. It's got that, feeling like, wow,
Well, you know, that's interesting because, of course, you know, it's going to be compared to West Wing in many ways, but I really relate it to films such as Dave and The American President, because you really see some more of the domestic side of the presidency. And which is nice, because if you just had kind of a West Wing Part 2 with a female president, no one would really be interested.
Yeah.
Well, but they did a nice spin with it. There's really good performances, some nice character actors that come through there. So
yeah, well, I mean,
that's why people enjoy it.
It's got this same kind of feel for me that the West Wing had. This is how a female president would act in the White House and everything. Yeah, I know. I just compare, just because they're too similar to show, I compare it to West Wing. I don't know. That's just
me. There's a feeling of realism to both, no doubt, and that's why people can kind of relate to it and relate it to things going on in their own lives.
And then Hugh Laurie won for House.
That's a show that I've picked up on recently, and he's great in it. You know, I've actually stayed away from the kind of new hospital dramas for a long time, but I kept hearing about House, kept hearing about Grey's Anatomy. I haven't gotten to Grey's yet, but I've gotten on the House bandwagon, and one of the major reasons is the performances, and of course Hugh Laurie heading it up. You know, it's just a very, very interesting character. You know, he's very downbeat, kind of very grouchy. He doesn't have a very many redeeming characters, but I actually thought about this a lot the other day. because I lead a geeky life. And, you know, you want to believe that you have some kind of genius torture doctor working at every single hospital that just, you know, gets eaten up alive until he can figure out what particularly is wrong with you and figures out how to fix you. Yeah. And I think that's part of the attraction to that show.
Yeah. And then best TV series went to music or comedy. It was Desperate Housewives. That's, you know, not have they won this like 2 years in a row now, that award?
Yeah, I think so. I'm a little disappointed in that.
Really?
I know Desperate Housewives has a lot of, you know, rabid fans, and good for them. I'm not a huge fan of the show, but there's just so many great comedies on television that I'm pretty disappointed to see this kind of dark satire, hour-long, you know, show take over that category. You know, give me any number of other shows, you know, boom, boom, right away, Arrested Development, The Office, even My Name is Earl, you know, some of the shows from HBO, obviously, Curb Your Enthusiasm, you could just have as an easy winner every single year. So it's very disappointing on that one.
Really? And then, what's the other one? Mary Louise Parker won for Weeds, right? And
she's great. I actually had the opportunity to attend the premiere party for Weeds and Barbershop in Hollywood last year. And, you know, I was impressed with that show right away. It's got a really strong, dramatic undertone, but a lot of comedy in it as well. And Mary Louise Parker is just great. You can just see different emotions washing over her face in every scene. And, it's kind of a really weird show. It's about a mom who sells marijuana to kind of make ends meet for her kids. But, you know, it's very interesting at the same time. And, of course, Kevin Nealon is in it also. He's always good.
And then Best Actor, Music, or Comedy went to Steve Carell for The Office?
Steve Carell, yeah. He was, you know, came out of the ranks of The Daily Show, you know, had some nice roles in different films, 40-Year-Old Virgin this past year. And he's really coming to his own in The Office. I can't say enough about this show. It's one of the best American comedies to come out over the last couple of years. I would put it right up there with Arrested Development over the last few years.
And really?
It keeps getting better each week. Steve Carell is really kind of heading up the slapstick comedy end of it, but there's a lot of great romantic comedy going on in the background, and the mix is just really, really fun to watch every week.
And then, Best and Worst Dressed. The only thing I noticed is that CNN beat up on what's her name from the E.T. movie, Drew Barrymore, because she wearing some hideous green dress with apparently no bra on. You can see her. It was very chilly in the auditorium where they had the awards, the Beverly Hills Hilton.
the gossip sheets have advised Drew Barrymore to buy a bra. apparently, Pam Anderson and Mariah Carey were also, you know, sort of put on the worst dress list. And for those two latter ones, it's kind of like, well, come on, what did you expect?
Yeah, and then talking about the Shield is back with Forrest Whitaker as Internal Affairs. They go up against Mackie.
Yeah, I love Forrest Whitaker, and he is just great because he's very strange and kind of like you don't know where he's coming from. Really, kind of has a weird high pitched tinge to his voice. And you could just tell he kind of obsesses every night about going after Vic Mackey, played by the great Michael Chiklis. And, you know, he does this great little bit with a piece of juicy fruit gum where he'll ask somebody if they want it.
Yeah.
And if they say no, he'll keep pushing it on them until they say yes. And then that's how he determines how much they'll break down through interrogation.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be a really fun character to watch all season. Of course, Glenn Close was the main addition last year.
Yeah.
She's not back, unfortunately. She was just great.
I'm
looking forward to seeing Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, she won an Emmy for that, didn't she?
I believe she did, yes.
Yeah, good for her.
She did, and she deserved it, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And then, now, Arrested Development. Now, any update? Has that been picked up yet by ABC? Because that rumor that ABC was going to pick up Arrested Development. No rumor about, information about that?
The last information I have is that it's in talks with Showtime. I have not heard anything about ABC. I do not believe there's been any kind of official announcement. I sure hope that somebody picks up that show. If a TV executive can't see the value to that show, and I actually think it'll have its best home on cable with either HBO or Showtime, and find a kind of a niche audience that way. I have a particular cross to bear with that show, just because I feel like if anybody can't see the inherent comedy, I just can't understand. I actually think there can be a personality test where you ask somebody, is Arrested Development funny, and you can kind of just see something in them. Of course, I'm not saying anything against those that don't like the show.
Yeah.
Understand, But that's my feeling on it. Pretty strong.
Oh, absolutely. I see. And I think it's a blast. It reminds me of soap when it was on a hold yard. If you remember soap, it reminds me of soap.
You know, Billy Crystal has one of the most important sort of breakthroughs for gay characters on television.
Yeah, and as you know, it was funny, and then but also it had its kind of semi serious storylines going and all that with. The father in prison, like and soap. The Chester Tate was in prison. And he escaped and all that. The shows are to me they feel kind of similar.
Arrested Development has a very quirky sensibility to it. To sort of just relate to those who don't enjoy the show. That not everyone is going to pick up on. It's a really really smart show because it will throw little foreshadows into the show that I don't pick up till I see the second time through. It'll kind of reference things that are, go back many weeks, and it will just kind of play with you that way and be very, very playful and offbeat in its sensibility that, just really kind of appeals to a certain kind of person, I guess, because it just doesn't seem to get ratings, even though it's such a critical hit. And but it works for me. I just think it's fantastic.
Yeah, now you said Fox is going to air the final four episodes. They're going to air them in a two-hour, 2-hour special or what?
Yeah, I believe they're going to throw them out there at one time in a two-hour block. They weren't going to show them at all. The shows were just going to be shelved, but I think they're just, kind of feeling the pressure from, websites like SaveOurBluth.com. Of course, the Bluth family is the family on the show. Mm-hmm. Save Our Bluth, SOB, etc.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, the last several weeks, the show has just been really ripping on Fox again and again and again through weird asides, and little acronyms.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I believe during last week or the week before, they talked about, hey, it's showtime, referring to, the cable network. And
yeah.
Say, oh, we better start the show. And they did HBO as an acronym. All different kinds of things like
well,
that.
Well, I mean, really, that show doesn't seem like it should have been on Fox to begin with. Yeah, I think that show should have been on one of the big networks. Because that show's like a typical network type of a show, like soap. Soap was on ABC. Maybe they should have had it all along. You know what I mean?
Fox has a weird ability to get brilliant shows on the air and just murder and stifle and cancel them before their time. You take Firefly, you take Wonderfalls,
Space Above and Beyond.
Inside this past summer, or another really promising show, again and again and again, they just murder brilliant shows in their infancy, and I don't know why.
I don't know if it's because they don't give them enough promotion, or the Fox is still not up there in the league with the other networks, or what, because they had Space Above and Beyond, they killed that show, they killed Firefly, I mean, they killed all these shows, it's unbelievable. Only shows they seem to hang on is, X-Files, and they canceled, Millennium after, two seasons, three seasons? Wherever it was,
the only thing I can imagine is that they're crazy. I just don't know. I really don't. Obviously the bottom line is ratings.
Mm-hmm.
American Idol gets it. It stays on the air year after year. Arrested Development doesn't, so it goes off. And I just don't get it.
Yeah, well, they just extended American Idol for five more years, right?
I thought it might have been 50, but I think you're right.
I wonder if Simon Cowell will still be doing it in 50 years, huh?
He'll find a way to be there,
yeah.
I bet.
Well, he almost didn't come back. They had a big contract dispute with him, and he almost didn't come back. That would have been that would have hurt the wound of that show pretty badly,
Yeah, I think he knew he had them where he wanted them.
Yeah, let's say he did a whole who shot Simon Cowell storyline there. He comes out of the wraps and turns out somebody else is now Simon Cowell, you know what I mean?
Well, what are people going to tune in to watch Paul Abdul?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, who else can fill it? Who would take over for Simon Cowell in that role? We really have nobody I could think of off the top of my head, and then somebody nasty, like maybe Joan Rivers or something like that.
Unless they got Steve Carell or something, I won't be tuning in.
Yeah, but no, he's somebody that'll rip these contestants apart. I mean, I don't know who's got the. I say Joan Rivers, something like that.
Maybe that Weakest Link woman could do it.
Oh. Is she still around? What was her name? The redhead,
I don't know.
The host of that show. Yeah, I'm insane. If they do get rid of him, they'd have to come up with somebody else. Same thing with that thing with Paul Abdul, that guy from last year. We don't know what's going to happen if she was going to leave. Who was going to take her place? I said maybe Gloria Estefan would have taken her place.
I think the other critics on that show are a little bit replaceable, but they had to have Cowell back, so they made sure that happened.
Yeah, I mean,
hopefully he won't have a scandal with any of the contestants this year.
Yeah, he's been pretty quiet. I mean, you really don't hear him having problems on that show like she has. And
yeah,
say,
yeah, he keeps it on the field apparently.
Yeah, well, they're really upping the expectations. I saw some in USA Today the other day. He's saying that the feeling he's got for this season is like he felt in the first season. So that's, you know, if that's right, I mean, that's going to be one hell of a season coming up, huh?
It certainly seems to be as popular as ever. It hasn't kind of faded out like the other, you know, sort of reality fads, you know, so to speak, or, you know, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was so popular, you know, and then it kind of burned itself out with oversaturation. You know, it doesn't look like we've hit that yet with American Idol. You know, they seem to be pretty good at spacing it out just enough.
Well, I mean, it's that, and every year it's a whole different cast of contestants, so it's not like the same cast. Oh, you know, just the judges and what's Ryan Seacrest, but the rest of it's a whole fresh people, you know.
Yeah, and you know, with Ryan Seacrest now hosting the New Year's special from here to probably the next millennium, we'll see if we get some oversaturation with him as well.
Yeah,
I personally hope so, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, Eric Berlin, we'll let you go. We're at the end of our little segment with you.
Always great to be with you.
Thank you very much, Eric Berlin. We thank you for being on the program. Have a good night.
You too. And everybody check out blogcritics.org. You'll
love
it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye. And that was Eric Berlin of blogcritics.org with our pop culture discussion, nice healthy discussion of the Golden Globes and the Shield and Arrested Development. And we'll take a couple minute break while we get the Maureen Ryan on the line here so we can talk about Battlestar Galactica. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned for Maureen Ryan of the Chicago Tribune.
This is Jeopardy. And now, here is the host of Jeopardy!
Hello, everyone. I am Alex Trebek, and welcome to Celebrity Jeopardy. Today's contestants are ex-presidents George Bush.
Good day.
Ronald Reagan. Adieu. And current commander-in-chief Bill Clinton.
Howdy.
Gentlemen, let's begin.
I'll take biblical sins for 100, Alex.
This unnatural sex act got its name from the ancient city of Sodom and Gomorrah.
What is sodomy?
Sorry, Mr. Bush. The correct answer was sodomy, not sodomy. Mr. Clinton.
I'll try biblical sins for 200, Alex.
This sin was admitted to by a former president of the United States. Mr. Bush.
What is sodomy?
No. Mr. Reagan.
Yes, what is a platypus?
Incorrect. President Clinton.
What is dropping your trousers?
Sorry.
Smoking pot?
No.
Whipping it out?
No.
Draft dodging?
Sorry, President Clinton, the answer was lusting in one's heart.
Been there, done that.
Please, continue.
I'll take 20th century presidents for 100, Alex.
This president was shot by would-be assassin John Hinckley. Mr. Reagan.
Who is Abraham Lincoln?
No. Mr. Bush.
Who is Ronald Reagan?
Correct. Go again.
20th century presidents for 200, Alex.
Then Vice President Dan Quayle embarrassed himself when he couldn't spell this common vegetable. Mr. Reagan.
What is peyote?
No. President Clinton.
Who is James Brady?
Incorrect. Mr. Bush.
What is potato?
Yes, try again.
20th century presidents for 300.
Ich bin ein Berliner is the German translation for this. Mr. Bush.
Read my lips. No new taxes.
No. Mr. Reagan.
Yeah, good night, John Boy.
No. President Clinton.
I, too, am a Berliner.
Correct.
I feel your pain. Ooh.
Go again.
The White House for $100.
The White House has 17 of these. Mr. Reagan.
Where is the bathroom?
Yes, go again.
I know where is the bathroom. I have to go.
Mr. Reagan, please select a category.
A 20th century presidents for 1,000.
It's the Daily Double.
Oh, my.
Mr. Reagan, how much are you going to wager?
Yes, Charlie Weaver to block.
Mr. Reagan, how much?
Let it ride.
And please remember, this is an audio Daily Double.
Come on, Snake Eyes.
This president and his wife waged a war on drugs using this catchphrase.
Just say no. Oh, my. Who is Carrot Top?
Oh, sorry. The correct answer was Ronald Reagan.
And we are back with subject to discussion. We killed off Reagan there in the Celebrity Jeopardy, and we'll bring on Maureen Ryan of the Chicago Tribune. Maureen, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Long time no here. How you been doing?
Oh, great.
Really?
Excellent. Just trying to actually catch up with all the good TV that's on right now.
Really? Now, what are you watching in addition to Galactica?
I was actually just watching Grey's Anatomy, which is totally different from Battlestar Galactica, but I still enjoy it.
Really? What else? Do you watch Arrested Development?
I do. I love Arrested Development. I can't wait. Did you guys? I'm sure you know this, but there's going to be a 2-hour season finale.
Yeah. And hopefully it'll turn up on ABC or something like that. I know.
I think so. Yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance. I've got my fingers crossed.
I hope so. I mean, it's a quality show. I was telling our last guest that show kind of reminds me of Soap when I was younger. It has the same kind of feeling. You know, I don't know if you remember. I don't know if you're old enough to remember Soap.
Yeah, I remember. That's a really good analogy.
Yeah, it's similar to that. You know, the storylines aren't as serious. Well, Soap really. I guess they're kind of serious storylines, but you know, it's all full of humor and you know, Jessica Tate.
Yeah,
very
off
that.
The wall, definitely.
Yeah, to me, it has the same feeling about that. But anyway, now you know, she's a prolific writer at the Chicago Tribune, right?
Yeah, I try.
There you go. And now we haven't talked to you in a while. Now, how you feel the second season is going for Galactica versus the first season? How you feel it's moving along? Pretty good?
I think it's going really well, actually. I mean, I think you always have that fear that the second year, you know, might slow down or might sort of start repeating material. But I don't really see that. In fact, I think a lot of the characters are taking some really interesting turns, and I mean, that's to me what's always set the show apart, is that, you know, it's really about the people in these situations, you know, and who they become and how they change.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, the fact that the president, Laura Roslin, is just radically different from who she was, you know, right at the start, and Adam is different. You know, you always kind of, that's to me the excitement of the show, is not just the action and the adventure and the plots, but you know, where are these people going? I can never predict that, and to me, that's a good thing.
Well, it's a good analogy. I've said that before. I think I said it last week when Koenig Rules was on, that the characters of between Roslin and Adama, the two of them have switched positions. Like when the show first started, Adama was the military, hard ass of the two, and now she's kind of taken over that role. Like she's
absolutely.
The one.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, could you? You know, from watching the miniseries of the first few episodes, would you have ever thought that would happen?
No, that she'd, you know, first of all, send that Cylon out the airlock, and then want Adama to kill Kane, you know?
I know. And that's, to me, what's great, I mean, I really have a beef with shows when they will throw a major curve like that and make people do something radically different. Mm-hmm. But to me, what's great about Battlestar Galactica is that they really, you know, I'd say they've earned those changes. They really sort of laid the groundwork for them, so you really believe it. And so many other shows just get sloppy or get lazy and, you know, just start piling on all these developments that really don't make sense for the characters.
Well,
that's
true.
This is a show that really, they set things up, I think, long and long in advance.
Yeah, because her evolution is taken this long for it to come to this point. You know, when she first started, she was a little wallflower. She didn't want to do anything militarily, and then slowly, I think the turning point for her is when she sent that Cylon out the airlock. I think that's when she started really making that turn. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, and I was fortunate enough to speak with Ron Moore right before the Christmas, and he said that also for her, you know, time is just a factor. And I think it's funny because both Adama and Roslin have had or are having these near-death experiences, and for Adama, he basically came back and was, you know, had this radically different, you know, approach, and he, you know, just was kind of not maybe quite as decisive as he had been. Mm-hmm. And for Laura Roslin, Ron Moore said that, you know, her feeling is she's running out of time, and she doesn't have a lot of time to sort of dither about what she wants. You know, she wants to get the people, the remaining humans, to safety, and that's all she really cares about, and she's got nothing left to lose.
Yeah. Now, have you got any hints where they're going for season 3?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't really know. I mean, I found out a lot about what's happening in season 2.
Yeah.
But I have no idea, and I'm kind of at the point now where I don't want to know.
True.
Ron Moore was pretty forthcoming with the second half of the season, except for the finale. It's going to be a two-parter, and he said that it's going to throw a lot of curveballs and change. He said something along the lines of it's going to change the way that we do business.
Hmm.
And I don't know what that means, and I'm kind of at the point where I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I want them to surprise me.
That's true. I mean, when we first started giving the spoilers, I kind of got sick of that. I'm like, oh, it's ruining the surprise for me. As much as everybody wants to hear the spoilers, I'm like, ah, you know, no more spoilers, you know, and unless it's already up on the websites, then, you know, we could talk about it. But I mean,
Right. I mean, I try to be fairly careful to alert people if spoilers are coming, although I get hammered on occasion if I sort of let something slip that I shouldn't. But it's also so hard to know what's a spoiler anymore in this day and age when people watch stuff a lot via their TiVos or DVRs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got yelled at very strongly by one guy who said, you know, for the finale of a different show that I wrote about it 2 days after the finale aired, and he said, well, I hadn't seen it yet. You shouldn't have written about that.
Oh, for crying out loud. I mean,
it's dicey, but yeah, I mean, I think there are times I wish I didn't know stuff that's coming up, but it's also in the execution. You know, I think it's one thing to have someone give you a couple sentences on what the plot will be, but for me, you know, there's always those little character moments, and especially in Battlestar Galactica, that just kind of make it for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, like this past week, you know, the Resurrection Ship Part 1 and 2, I thought, you know, both of them were excellent. You know, it's a good way to end this. It actually is a three-parter, because it started off with Pegasus and ended with
absolutely.
And then I thought I had no problem. You know, a lot of people were screaming on the boards that, oh, they hated the way the show opened with Lee floating in the water and all that. I said, oh, come on. You know, it's a different way of telling the story, you know.
Right. I think that, you know, they've allowed a fair amount of, they've earned a fair amount of latitude in how they're going to tell stories. Although, my husband, it's his pet peeve when they do that thing where they say 48 hours earlier.
Yeah.
You know, when they come out with a few opening images and then say, well, 2 days before.
How
it got to that point.
I guess, yeah, some people, yeah, a lot of people are mad about that. They went back in time because at least, you know, Lee survived it or something, you know.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, come on.
It's funny because I just feel like, you know, any good show where I feel like the people have earned a certain level of trust with me, you know, like Lost or something like that, you know, or Battlestar, I'm going to give them room to, you know, room to do what they want, you know. I don't know how to do what they do, so I'm going to let them do it, you know. There's certainly things that I can argue about or, you know, or debate about, but that's what makes it fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I thought both the episodes, you know, were fine. A lot of people were saying, oh, the second episode was a letdown from the first one. I go, well, it had to be the conclusion. You know, they stretched this out. I mean,
I think you're right. I mean, to me, I have to say, the last maybe scene, I mean, I loved Michelle Forbes' portrayal. Mm-hmm. I think she's just a phenomenal actress, and I would watch her in anything, and they gave her this really meaty part. But I thought that last scene of her funeral, it seemed like it was like filler to me, to be honest with you. It just seemed like they were stretching the episode to kind of make it fill out the hour.
Yeah, well, I thought that too. I thought, well, maybe they should end it with her getting shot and just end the show there.
See, I agree with you there. I mean, I think, you know, that would have been like a crazy ending, you know, and that would have been so true to the show.
Yeah, and then he come back next week, like, you know, the funeral's already over, you know, the funeral's just ending, and they're, you know, integrating the Pegasus with the fleet and everything else.
Exactly,
but,
exactly.
And, well, I can see, in those battle scenes, those were incredible, huh?
Oh, they were crazy. They were so good.
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying, oh, I hope they put more into the DVD. I mean, you know, they don't have the budget for putting
I know.
Yeah. I mean,
DVDs have been fairly bare bones, you know, because they don't have a lot of time to turn them around. But, you know, I'm really happy with how they show, that, you know, they do the podcast on the web. You know, Ron Moore has his blog, you know, and now they're selling the show on iTunes. I mean, I think they're trying to, you know, give people some extras anyhow.
Yeah, and then, who stood out to you in these two episodes? Was Michelle Forbes? I thought Katie kind of stood out because...
She did.
Yeah.
You know who really surprised me, I have to say, the most? I have to say I was, to a certain extent, a doubter of the skills of Tricia Helfer.
Really?
You know, I have to say that I was, you know, I thought she was really good as number six, and obviously, you know, I mean, I'm not perhaps as attracted to her as maybe some folks out there. So, but, you know, I thought she was doing the really, you know, sexy kind of number six character well, but I didn't know if she had the range to do something beyond that. And now that she's doing this new character, is it Gina, I think?
Gina.
The different Cylon with the same facial features, obviously. I was just floored. Even before resurrection ship when that character was shown just in that prison cell. Mm-hmm. And you know, she had to do a lot of acting without using words, with just using her body mm-hmm. and her, you know,
facial expressions.
Her facial
yeah.
expressions, and she had to convey the diametrical opposite of Number Six, who's very confident and sexy and powerful. Mm-hmm. She has to portray this woman who's been raped, abused, beaten, starved. I mean, is different as night and day. And I thought she really, really did a good job.
Yeah, she really, she shined, I think, above everybody in that show. I mean, you know, 'cause she was a supermodel before she got on the show. She really had very little acting experience. So, boy, she's really, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more with you, Sean, because I think that's where I had her pegged in my mind mm-hmm. as a model turned actress who was playing a very sexy, supermodel-y character. So I thought, well, this isn't a stretch for her. I don't know if she can do more than this. And then when she was able to play Gina so powerfully, I was really impressed.
Yeah. Now, a question for you from the chat room. They're asking, do you think they should have left Kane's fate in the air for a possible return? Should Kane have just, you know, vanished or, you know...
Yeah. You know, that's really tempting to me. I really respect the writer's decision to kill her off, though. Mm-hmm. As much as I would love to see Michelle Forbes back in the show and Kane back in the show, mm-hmm. I really think that maybe there would have been too much speculation about, well, what would Kane do, or what will Kane, you know, take over if she comes back? Mm-hmm. I think you really kind of have to leave it, and I'm speculating here. I think that you had to leave it with Adama and, you know, Rosalind in charge, mm-hmm. or else, you know, it kind of makes it too much, puts too much doubt in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really a fan of that character, so it kind of kills me to say that, but I really see their logic in cutting off that story kind of cleanly.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can see that too, because I said, well, it kind of would have been cool to see her just vanish off the Pegasus, or, you know, or the ship gets, like in the first series, you know, the Pegasus, you don't know if it got destroyed or not. It right. leaves it out there for her to possibly make a return, but, I mean, that leaves too much hanging in the air, yeah. You know?
I think so.
Yeah, and then another question now. Let's see. Now, from the second season, they're asking, what episode stood out to you the most? That's kind of hard because all
you
the episodes.
What's interesting to me is the first one that popped into my mind, and I think it's second season. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the farm.
Oh yes.
Where Katie Sackhoff is kind of being operated on, mm-hmm. and you know that was just.
Incredible, wasn't it?
Incredible, and I, you know, to me that left a lot of unanswered questions, which I think we will see answered later. Yeah. I'll just be vague about that.
Oh, no, because, well, Katie said that 2 weeks ago, that she said they're going to deal with her missing ovaries.
Yeah, and they have to, you think. I mean, that's a pretty big hole in the plot, you know. What happened to Katie's ovaries?
Yeah. Now, what about the backlash that Anders is getting on the internet? The fans do not like him, but yet they're bringing him back for like three episodes. They call him Blanders.
Wait, who's this now?
A lot of the fans on go on the sci-fi board. They call Anders Blanders because they say he's a bland character and, you know, blah blah blah. I don't know. What do you think?
Which character is
Oh, Blanders. That's or Anders, Starbucks boyfriend.
Oh, I liked him.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone start flaming me.
You get a lot of hate mail now.
Stop attacking him. Start attacking me. Because I thought he was great. I mean, I don't know. I thought they had a spark. I mean, that's all. To me, someone who can have a spark with Katie Sackhoff on screen, and, you know, granted she's so attractive and so charismatic that I'm sure she can make those scenes work with just about anyone, but... I mean, for my money, I don't know that we got to know this guy enough to hate him, but, you know, yeah. I'm probably wrong about that. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Did you know who Koenig Rules is? Jim?
Is he one of the guys on the board?
Yeah. Him and I were talking last week, and we were saying, well, maybe Anders, you know, I don't know if they're going to plan a spinoff or not. It'd be kind of perfect if they do a spinoff of the Caprica Resistance.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. I think I would love for them to get back into that story. I thought that arc was actually really good, and... I'm going to go out here and say that a whole lot of the people who hate Blanders could possibly, some of them, be guys who are, you know, think
Katie
Sackhoff is hot. And
probably.
You know, that's how I am. It's like if I think there's a really cute guy in a show as my favorite character and some woman tries to get in his business, I'm like, she's not good enough. You know what I mean?
Well, how about that scene at the end of the show with Duella there, kind of commiserating, wishing she was with Lee there at the end of the episode.
Ooh,
well, that was kind of interesting, huh?
That was kind of interesting. I don't know what's going on with that. I've been wondering what's been going on. I'm guessing that Duella and, oh gosh.
Billy?
And what's his name?
Billy.
Billy, yeah. I'm sorry. I spaced out for a second. I guess she kind of kicked him to the curb, but I kind of been wanting that to start up again. But
well, no.
Joy.
Yeah, we kind of gave that away a few months ago. That's actually coming to an end.
Yeah,
which is unfortunate. But and then what else? We have another question. Do you have any issues, any news about the ratings?
Actually, that's a good point. I don't. They usually send out releases, and maybe I just spaced out and missed it, but I think it did fine. I mean, it had been growing and doing well all of the previous, you know, first 10 episodes of the second season, so I have no doubt that it continued on that path. I mean, they're real happy with how the series has been going.
Yeah. Well, I think because the King holiday yesterday, I think they may have pushed everything back a day.
You know, I think that's it. I usually get those releases on the Monday, so
you know,
I should look in my email now. It's probably out there now.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, you know, because 2.1, everybody says, oh, it's going down the drain. I go, well, 2.1 actually is pretty good for cable. I mean,
it's very good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, sure, they'd like more, but I think, you know, I think one thing you got to think about, and they've had really good success selling the DVDs. They've had really good success selling it on iTunes. You know, I mean, I think they've been really smart about how they kind of market the show. And for a show to be attracting a lot of the much-desired 18 to 49 demographic, you know, especially males, they're very pleased with that, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then the critics have been universally, praising the show. Everybody, it's a great show on television. All the, you know, it's amazing. Even from the first, season, you could see, okay, then you think the critics would turn on it in the second year, but they're sticking with the show, which is incredible.
I think they're embracing it even more.
Yeah.
I mean, I just saw that the New Yorker did a big piece on the show, and Time Magazine picked it as the show of the year, and I'm so pleased with that, you know. The one thing that bugs me, and I hope nothing I've ever written comes off this way, is when people say it's not just another sci-fi series, meaning sci-fi shows are bad, but this one is the different one that's not bad. You know, it's like, it's kind of like an insult sort of backhandedly to the genre, but there's a lot of bad sci-fi, but there's also a lot of bad, you know, medical shows or soap operas, so, you know, I just wish they wouldn't kind of backhandedly slap all of sci-fi TV, but...
Yeah, well, it's like I told Katie when she was on 2 weeks ago, I said, you know, to me, Galactica reminds me, you know, I'm a little older, reminds me of Dallas in its heyday. It was, you know, it was an escape, you know, but it's like a soap opera set in space, you know what I'm saying? It's
right,
not all sci-fi.
But I actually think, you know, I think you're right about that in terms of the personal relationships and the complicated arcs and all that. To me, I really think it's very, if you want to take it this way, it can be very topical. It can be very political in a way, because if you think about it, they're dealing with insurrections and civil liberties and prisoners and, you know what I mean, like in warfare and survival. I mean, and I don't think what's cool is I don't think they come down in any particular camp or political stripe. I mean, I think they're just showing a lot of different situations that people get into when they feel like they're under attack.
Yeah, well, they're dealing with a lot of issues that are going on now, like with the torture of Gina, and now we got the Abu Ghraib and all that stuff.
Right.
So it's playing with what's going on now, and you know it's in a different sphere with same thing.
And
with
I think if you the FX came out with a show called Over There, which was a direct commentary on the Iraq War, and it didn't do all that well. I think for a lot of reasons, and it's very complicated, but I think with a show like Battlestar, they can do that stuff and get away with more even because it's, you know, allegedly happening in space and, you know, not in our environment that we're very familiar with in our world, you know?
And like next week, they're going to deal with possibly aborting the baby that Boomer's carrying, so they're going to play with the abortion issue now. You know?
I know, and I think, you know, like I said, I think they can play with fire in a way that I don't know a lot of other dramas can, because they have that layer of, well, it's just science fiction, but really that allows them to get away with a lot, in my opinion.
Yeah. And then they say, oh, another question. I'm sorry. I'm ignoring the questions. Which character would you like to see more of and delved into?
Oh, that's a really good question. Mm. You know, I love the Chief. Mm. He's just emerged as one of my favorites. I think he kind of, you know, he obviously was Boomer's boyfriend, but I'm hoping we can find a different, you know, different way to explore what's going on with him. Mm-hmm. I guess some of the newer pilots, I'm kind of wondering if they're going to get worked into plots a little bit more, but I don't, you know.
Which one? Which one?
That, Starbuck was training.
Oh, Hot Dog and all them, and
yeah,
Racetrack?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not obsessed, like, that they should get more screen time, but it'd be kind of cool. I mean, the Billy and Duala thing, I guess, as we said, that's over, but maybe I'm still unrealistically hoping for that to be. I'm trying to think what else, who else would I like to see more of?
How about Ty's wife? I think we've seen enough of her.
I don't know what more there is to do with her. I love Ty, though, and I loved I loved the scene where Ty was talking with the exo of the Pegasus, and they were kind of telling war stories, but they kind of had this interesting dynamic. You know, I think what we will see more of is more of the Pegasus crew and how they interact with the Battlestar Galactica crew, and as we've seen, that doesn't usually go very well. Mm. But it'd be interesting to kind of get the different perspective of the different crews and see them interact with those folks a little bit more. That's true.
Well, we don't know how long the Pegasus is going to stick around, too. You know what I'm
exactly.
saying?
Oh, one more favorite I want to see more of, Doc Cottle.
Ah, absolutely.
Yeah. He just steals every scene that he's in, and he doesn't even do much except smoke.
Yeah, well, he said something, what was it, to,
Sharon.
When Adama was visiting her in the brig, or whatever it was, he said something about, I don't know what he said, but what happened to her? He goes, it was wrong, and Adama can't give him a look. Like, who do you think you are?
Yeah, really, like, and you are?
I like his character. Like I said, now, I don't think I'm worried. You know, we haven't seen Tom's, it's only the second episode in, but I start to miss Richard Hatch. You know, I like Zarek. You know, he hasn't been in it at all, you know. And
he's coming back, though. So, and I guess Lucy Lawless is coming back as well.
Yeah, for 10 episodes next season.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But can I just say, as a journalist, it's a standard complaint of mine that every single TV show has at least one, if not multiple, episodes that revolve around the dishonest journalist. It's like this constant plot that I see. It's constant. Well, thanks. Thanks so much. Thanks for helping.
I don't know why they do that. Well, the episode she was in, I thought it was okay. You know, it was a good departure from their normal stuff. It kind of lightened things up a little bit, you know.
Right.
And then the ending with the guy is whistling the theme music from the original show. I thought that was a cool way to end it. You know, that's like the theme song from the old show is like their national anthem or something.
That's really cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I wonder if we'll see more of that because they're asking, will we see any of the original toasters on this show? I don't think so, huh?
I don't think so.
No.
I do like the little references that they build into the original. And, you know, I was reading on Richard Hatch's website that, you know, I don't know if they'll bring any more of the original cast, but, you know, it'd be cool if they could, you know. But what I liked about how they brought him back is that the character made sense and it wasn't just grandstanding.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just a cameo that would take you out of that reality.
Yeah, they gave him something to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, well, I like kind of how the Pegasus on the Resurrection ship and the Pegasus was somewhat similar to the Pegasus on the original show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looked, you know, you can tell that, you know, they stretched it or made it bigger or whatever it was, but it still had a similar look to it. So it's nice. They give these nods to the original series.
Right. And I think that's the level of detail that you see in the show. I think, you know, what's great about a show like that is that they really pay attention to the smaller nuances and the details and even the sets and stuff like that. I think that really shows that they care about the fans. And even if the fans don't always agree, that they're trying to, you know, be as attention, detail-oriented as they can and make a quality show.
Now we already know that Dean Stockwell's coming out at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think, you probably know more than anybody else, that his character, is that going to propel the show in a whole different direction, do you know?
I don't know much about that. I don't want to say. I can't even say. You know,
yeah.
I'm not even going to be coy.
Well, will he be a memorable character? We'll say that. Will
I
we?
Think so.
Really?
I think so. Yeah. I think he's a good actor.
No matter what.
So I mean, I wouldn't. There's one thing I know about there's that episode that is coming up toward the end of the season that is it's going to involve things told from a Cylon point of view.
Ah.
And it's funny because I went on a few of the boards and people were saying, oh, but I thought they scrapped that episode. Well, as far as I know, it's still going forward.
There you go.
And there's one thing I know from that episode that I just don't want to tell, but it's going to be really, really cool.
Really?
So, yeah, there's another thing that happens on board the Galactica that you probably wouldn't expect at that time.
Wow.
So that's my little teaser.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, you know, if I was a Dama and I had both of these ships, I'd move over to the Pegasus because it's a more advanced ship here. You know what I'm saying?
It certainly looks like Kane had some nice quarters.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She
you know?
A nice bridge.
That was some rich Corinthian leather that was going on there. It was, like, very nice.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, and the bridge looked pretty cool. I like the bridge.
They seem a lot more ship-shape, if you will.
Well, it's a more advanced ship than the Galactica,
right.
But I mean,
that's true.
I mean, if I was the admiral now, he got promoted. Well, Starbuck got promoted to captain, right?
That's right.
And then Fisk is now the commander of the Pegasus.
Right. So I don't think that's going to go well. Let's put it that way.
Really? Now,
no.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that the last person that Dama would stick put over there would be a tie over what happened when he was shot. You know?
Oh, you'd think, but yeah, I don't know. They don't think he, I think he wants to keep Ty a little closer to hand and watch over him a little bit.
Yeah. Now, how about that scene with the Dama in the mirror feeling his scar, and then he went from there to the scene with him and Boomer. He asking, why do the Cylons hate us so much? I thought that was pretty interesting.
That was really interesting. You know, to me, that's the heart and the soul of the show. Mm. I mean, why do they hate us? And why, you know, as I was saying before, I think there's so many implications in the idea that they look just like us for the most part, you know, but they think they're better than us and we think they're better than them and they hate us. And it's like, it's sort of like the other, you know, in every civilization we've had these massive clashes, wars, and whatever, and we always think, well, we know better than they do, and then at the end of the day you find out, well, the vast majority of people on both sides weren't actually homicidal maniacs, you know?
Yeah, well, I thought it interesting how Boomer threw back what Adama said, actually, from the miniseries in that speech, you know, you know, are we any better, you know, than the Cylons are? Because we're the ones that created them. You know?
Exactly. To me, there's this whole moral basis for the series of, like, you know, who's better than whom and why. What, you know, what makes the Cylons are absolutely convinced that what they believe and who they are is superior to human beings. But what is it about any creature that thinks that, well, if I'm better, then you must be worse and I must eliminate you, you know? It's just like it's perennial theme.
Yeah, well, that's the overall arc of the show. You know,
right.
It's the Cylons and then the humans. And, you know, we're looking at it from the human point of view. But then now we're getting hints that the humans are not as perfect as we're led to believe. We see how Kane was taking care of Gina. And, you know, we know Adama's keeping Boomer locked in her cell and everything after she saved the fleet, you know.
Exactly. I mean, I think, for me, where this show is heading, and this is just speculation, it's not based on anything I've read or anyone I've talked to, but why do we necessarily think the Cylons are innately evil?
Mm.
You know, why? Obviously, they did try to wipe out humanity. That's a mark against them, I'll admit that.
Mm.
But in their minds, they're doing the ethical, moral, upright thing, and I don't know. I mean, who really is the better party here? I mean, I think as you're saying, it's not like the humans are necessarily all that much better if they're, you know, treating prisoners like trash. You know, and it's very interesting to me, like, where that whole issue is going to go.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it unfolds. Maureen, we'll have to let you go. We're at the end of our segment with you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Maureen.
It was very fun.
You're welcome. Hope we come back.
Hey, can I plug my website?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
It's chicagotribune.com/watcher. That's WATCHER. And for all my Battlestar Galactica stuff, just click on that the words Battlestar Galactica on the right-hand side of the page.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
Bye. Bye.
And thanks again to Maureen Ryan for staying up late with us to talk about Battlestar Galactica. And next week we'll have Chip on from PoliticalSports.com. And Katie said she'll be on next week.